Hello, welcome to the Monday, December 15th, 2014 edition of the Sands and Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks to Eric for reminding us that shell shock is still a problem. He sent us an interesting detect showing a worm that is spreading among QNAP devices, exploiting the shell shock vulnerability. Now, with these QNAP devices, the problem is that, yes, there's a patch available. The patch came out a little bit late, but by now everybody should have applied it. If you can apply it, the tricky part here is you usually have to reboot the entire system. Then, for example, if you're using it in a virtual environment, then you have to also shut down those virtual machines. Can be quite tricky to sort of get those systems patched. So understandable that a lot of people don't patch them or patch them slowly. But then again, why are they exposed to the open internet? Anyway, this particular detect shows a worm that is currently spreading among QNAP devices. It does a couple of evil things. Aside from spreading, it also sets up a number of backdoors. For example, it sets up an SSH server on port 26. Also copies over some CGI scripts that are likely backdoors. We weren't able to recover all of them. Interestingly, it also patches the QNAP device for shell shock. Of course, that's not that terribly unusual. We have seen malware do that before in order to prevent additional exploitation using this identical vulnerability. If you do have any QNAP devices, take a quick look. Probably scanning for open port 26 is the easiest way to find these systems. It also changes the DNS server to 8.8.8.8. That's the Google DNS server. Not 100% sure why they're doing it, but maybe to get a more reliable DNS server. Sometimes these QNAP devices only use sort of internal DNS servers that aren't fully recursive. Or maybe also to evade some logging that may be happening. And in addition to all of this, this worm also appears to have a monitoring objective behind it. It does conduct some click fraud by simulating clicks against certain banner ads that are then being registered with an Italian ad network. And then we got two more problems with Windows updates. First of all, one that was released with a patch Tuesday. That's an update to the Windows root certificates. Apparently on some systems, among them Windows 7 and Windows 2008, that leaves the user with a corrupt certificate. And as a result, then no additional software, no additional updates can be verified as legit. Microsoft did now release an updated patch for these users. And apparently the Silverlight update had to be recalled too. There is a new one available that was released on Friday. The Silverlight update that was originally released does disable some of the copyright protection features in Silverlight, which then makes it impossible to stream certain video content. So in case you're still using Silverlight and had problems streaming content, apparently Time Warner was affected by this, then you need to install this latest and greatest version of Silverlight released on Friday. And threat intelligence company Norse did find an interesting vulnerability in FreeBSD last week. This vulnerability is in the standard I/O library, which means that more or less any software that uses that library is now vulnerable. What the attacker can do with this vulnerability depends on what the privileges are that this respective software is being used at. But of course, there's plenty of system software and such that does use standard I/O. So there is really a very large attack surface here that could potentially be exploited. Critical that you apply the patch and also that you reboot your system after applying this patch. And if you're using Docker to containerize and distribute cloud applications, be aware there is a vulnerability in Docker 1.3.2 that was patched last week with Docker 1.3.3. The problem with Docker is that essentially it allows developers to write little functions, little applications in whatever language they would like and then deploy them across a large number of systems quickly, and then these little applications will work with each other. independent of the language they're written in. The challenge here is that, of course, these applications have to be kept apart from each other, and that's where the problem lies here. For example, last week we talked about the dangers of symlinks in zip files. That's one of the problems here. If you upload a zip file, then that zip file is being extracted on the server. A symlink in that zip file may now point to another file that the user otherwise wouldn't be able to reach. So just keep patching. And with that, thanks for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.